Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the weekly newscast here on pwponderings.com. It has been a crazy week of news, some of it sad, some of it exciting, just a whirlwind of things going on. Of course, I'm Chris Gisti. I am the web admin. And as always, I'm joined by our senior editor, Jerome Cusson. Jerome, crazy week. Crazy week.
I mean, Chris, this has been just a very... when you say emotional roller coaster, it's a cliche to say that, but for me, the past week has been an emotional roller coaster, and I think for a lot of fans, it's been an emotional roller coaster. Just a lot of insanity to talk about. I mean, before the show, we were discussing, you know, all of the news that needs to be gone over, and there's so much to it. Without any further ado, I think we should just get right into it, and I think we know where the logical place to start is.
Yeah, it would be the passing of a legend in professional wrestling. That word sometimes gets thrown around too much, but he really was. Dusty Rhodes passing away, the age of 69, and as far as I know, everything being reported, just still kind of... hopefully, quote-unquote, of natural causes, and it just, it's so sad. I mean, that news caught me off guard. You wrote a piece about, you know, all the outcry from social media and the pouring of feelings and stories, and I encourage everyone who is a member of the Wrestling Observer to check out the podcast that Rob Naylor did. I mean, Jerome, this guy, as you noted, best known for much of his stuff, you know, in the Mid-Atlantic area, having... just a huge influence on guys such as even Ric Flair. He was his hero growing up, not growing up, but when he first got into the business. And the impact he has had on future possible, you know, superstars and legends, you know, everyone coming through FCW/NXT since I want to say, what was it, like 2007 and on. And just, I mean, Jerome, this is a huge loss for the pro wrestling community.
Dusty Rhodes is a larger-than-life figure in the annals and the history of pro wrestling, and he is someone that his impact is going to be felt for many years to come through the eyes and the ears of so many of the NXT superstars that Dusty Rhodes has helped. And I think that that is the thing that has really made people look at Dusty Rhodes in a very specific light. You know, if we were talking about Dusty Rhodes in, you know, 1998 or 2000, I think a point of him would be very, very different than it was here in 2015. You know, when he was in the NWO and he was a goofy announcer on WCW Saturday Night, and the Dusty finish had become almost this cliche in the world of pro wrestling, and this thing that we all spread our venom at because of just how cliched it was, and, you know, the way that Dusty Rhodes would put himself over in the booking, and, you know, I think that is sort of part of his legacy. But if you look at what he's done also in the last 10 years, it's all been all about getting over this younger talent, you know, starting in FCW, and obviously still being a part of NXT even up to the day that he died, and to see so many of the NXT superstars, the wrestlers, and even some of the former NXT wrestlers, you know, just talking about what Dusty Rhodes meant to them. It was a universal praise of Dusty Rhodes. And, you know, I think for older fans, he is going to be, for really old fans, he's the guy that was in Florida Championship Wrestling for so long, and, you know, was a tag team partner of Dick Murdoch's. For people who grew up in the 1980s and, you know, were 10 to 12 years old in 1983, 84, 85, he's going to be the Mid-Atlantic guy. And, you know, the feud and the wrestling against Ric Flair for my generation and beyond, and maybe a little bit younger, you know, he's a WCW commentator, and he's also someone that has left an incredible impact on the world of the WWE and of NXT specifically. His reach is just so vast at this point that it's incredible to think that he is no longer with us, because, you know, there are a lot of wrestlers that I think you can look at and say that they are legends and that they are icons, But it just seems like with Dusty Rhodes, this is a guy who has had so much influence on other people. And, you know, he's got the promos that everybody loves to impersonate. And the other thing that's amazing to me about Dusty Rhodes is that when people talk about him, they don't talk about the legendary matches and the work rate necessarily. They talk about his promos. They talk about the moments. And they talk about sort of the legacy and what a character he was. And I think that more so than anything defines who Dusty Rhodes is as a person. And, you know, look, I'm 30 years old at this point. I don't have, you know, I don't remember Dusty Rhodes in his prime. And Chris, I know you don't either. So it's very tough for us as millennials to talk about the legacy of Dusty Rhodes. At this point, you know, Dave Meltzer is going to do his obituary and it's going to be, you know, sort of the definitive word on who Dusty Rhodes was. But I think even for us, we understand what Dusty Rhodes meant to the world of wrestling, what he still means, and what he's going to mean even 10 to 20 years from now.
Right. I mean, we're going to see guys like Roman Reigns. I mean, Rob Naylor talked about it, the numerous guys, Bray Wyatt, that Dusty had an influence on, and really anyone that got a chance to go through his classes. So I agree with you that we didn't get to see him in his heyday. I've seen a number of his matches, you know, by going back either through YouTube or WWE DVD releases or the stuff sold through High Spots. You know, just he has a body of work that no one can really argue against is some of the best of his generation. There are parts of me that wish I'd grown up with it, but I just didn't. So, but yeah, he's going to be missed, and I think his reach is still going to be felt probably years from now. Obviously, depending on some of how the WWE treats certain talents going forward. But, you know, as they say, the show must go on. But of course, our condolences to the Runnels family, and it's a very trying time right now. So, Jerome, why don't we talk about something a little bit lighter? You know, a lot of shows happened this past weekend. Chikara, CZW, Freelance, Global Force Wrestling held their first two shows. And we're going to get to all that, but if you want to see really detailed results, you can go to pwponderings.com/results. Check those out. I'm actually just going to start off with Chikara, the Sword of Destiny. It took place June 13th, Chicago. Yourself, Kevin Ford, and a couple of your friends, I believe, were also there. You know, you were tweeting the results, or Kevin was. It was a lot of fun. Kevin even apparently got to be a part of the show to a certain degree. You know, why don't you tell us about your time there? Was it fun? And, you know, it's Chikara, right?
It is Chikara, and it was a very strange night, just in general. And you know, I sort of do want to talk about the weekend as a whole. Kevin, his friend Chris, and myself, we got to spend some time at Dr. Keith's bar on Friday nights. We unfortunately were not able to go to Freelance Wrestling, even though you know, if not for these other plans that we had made previously, I think we would have absolutely considered Freelance Wrestling. It's the shows are always fun. It sounded like some really good things happened. And, you know, I want to congratulate Isaias Velasquez, who became the very first Freelance heavyweight champion. And it's really great to see someone who's a very underrated talent in Chicago here get that level of opportunity. And I think he's going to do a lot of really positive things with the Freelance championship. But as far as the Chikara show, you know, I think for Kevin Ford, this was sort of his redemption. He was supposed to come to Chicago last year, but unfortunately he was diagnosed with lymphoma on the day that he was supposed to fly into Chicago. So for him to be here, it was on his birthday, no less. Chikara came to Chicago basically almost a year to the day that he was supposed to come to Chicago, and he was able to do that. And, you know, I think we saw a really good show overall. There was a lot of really good wrestling on it. Not a lot of storyline stuff really happened. The only real major storyline note was that Fire Ant, Worker Ant, and Green Ant tried to get Soldier Ant to come back into the fold of the colony, and Soldier Ant was very conflicted, and obviously that is a storyline that they are going to be playing into for the rest of the season, presumably. Kevin Ford, hopefully we can get Viva Chikara back, and Kevin Ford can talk more about that stuff. Let's see. What else happened at Chikara? Green Ant and Blaster McMassive had one of the stiffest matches that I've seen in quite some time. I guess the Chikara roster was watching the Raw Japan tapes, because this match, Jaka versus Eddie Kingston and Dasher Hatfield versus Tommaso Ciampa, these are three very stiff matches. And honestly, you can buy these. The best part about Chikara now is that you can buy individual matches. So if you don't want to buy the whole Chicago show for, I think it's $11 or $12, you can get each of those three matches for $2 a piece, and they are definitely worth it. Green Ant and Blaster McMassive was a really, really stiff and very good match. And this was just a very, very enjoyable show overall in the world of Chikara. You know, obviously, I'm not the biggest Chikara fan right now, but this was a very, very good show, and I'm glad that I got to see it in front of a sold-out crowd in Chicago. And it's especially good that this was a good show because, you know, I'll talk about this at the end, but, you know, some personal things were going on in my life that made this a difficult show to sort of absorb and be a part of. But, you know, I'm really glad that I was there, and I think what everybody is curious to hear is, you know, what happened on Saturday nights. And before the official main events, there was a bonus match afterwards. But before the official main event of Tommaso Ciampa versus Dasher Hatfield, Gavin Loudspeaker was going around and putting over some of the great fans that were in town. I guess somebody had flown in from Switzerland to come to see Chikara live, put over a couple of other fans. And then, you know, he talked about Kevin Ford, and he talked about, you know, everything that Kevin went through last year. The fact that it was his birthday, the fact that he was diagnosed with lymphoma, and Kevin got a standing ovation from the entire sold-out crowd in the Logan Square Auditorium, and he was invited to the ring by Gavin Loudspeaker and Bryce Remsburg, and the ovation continued. And I don't know if Kevin would even be comfortable talking about what happened. You know, I know that he's, when we talked about it afterwards, he talked about what a surreal moment it was for him to be a part of that and to just, you know, get that kind of a reaction. And it was an incredible thing to see. And I have been very critical in the past about Chikara and sort of the things they've done. But what they did on Saturday was something that Kevin is obviously never going to forget. And it's something that I know that I'm not going to forget either. You know, they didn't have to do that. But I think to show that level of appreciation to someone who cares so much for Chikara. I mean, he's done Chikara columns for the last 7 years, going even back before Pro Wrestling Ponderings. He was doing Chikara stuff for the Cool Kids table back in 2008. So he's been doing Viva Chikara for a number of years, and even when it was the podcast was titled differently, you know, he's got the Tumblr. He helped write the yearbook for Chikara. So Kevin Ford absolutely deserved everything that he got on Saturday night from the company that he has loved for so many years. And you know, there are certain people in the online world of wrestling that, you know, I would not feel this way about, but I think anyone who knows Kevin Ford and who knows what he's all about, they would say that he deserves it too. So Saturday night, from that perspective, was very gratifying. Just to be able to see that, I'm really glad that I was there for it.
Yeah, I was pretty jealous, actually, that I didn't get a chance to see that. But I will, obviously, and I can buy the matches. And as you said, you know, you point out some of the ones that people were saying were really good. The Green Ant Blaster McMassive, the Eddie Kingston versus Jaka, and Dash Hartfield versus Tommaso Ciampa. And, you know, they did the bonus challenge of the Immortals match, you know, on both shows, actually. There were bonus matches. And, you know, Chikara is still doing some interesting things. We actually now have a columnist. I mean, one of many that we have brought on to PWP. He is doing a series of articles right now. I believe his plan is to have one out almost every day this week, talking kind of the backstory of what happened during the shutdown and what has happened afterwards to bring everyone up to speed. So go check them out on our website, on our column section. I mean, like I said, Chikara, not necessarily for everyone, but I think they are trying to bring back some of the fans that they had beforehand. And, you know, hey, I'm even looking forward to some. And like you said, a great thing to be able to just buy select matches. That will actually increase viewership for me just because it's something that I can check out individually. I don't necessarily have to watch the entire show. But, you know, speaking of shows that some people were probably really interested in, and I don't know if they lived up to those expectations. The Global Force Wrestling had their debut show on the 12th and then the second one on the 13th. First one in Jackson, Tennessee. Crowd was ranged between 400 to 500. Some of the, I guess, the bigger matches on the show, you know, you saw Jim Cornette. He came out. He thanked the fans. He paid tribute to Dusty Rhodes. Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows of the Bullet Club pinned the New Heavenly Bodies in the main event. You also saw Moose pin Too Cocky Kevin Matthews. Saw the
former. Can we just say the Bullet Club, that whole Sheik aspect of the Bullet Club is now dead. Jim Cornette managing the Bullet Club, shaking hands with Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows. Man, the Bullet Club could not be any less cool. And I would like to say that I was never on the Bullet Club bandwagon, but man, everybody with the exception of, like, when AJ Styles and the Young Bucks wrestle, that's awesome. Those guys are great. But otherwise, every other aspect of the Bullet Club needs to go away as quickly as possible.
I mean, what can I say? You also had the former Chris Masters taking on Dustin Starr. Yeah, I haven't seen the matches. They're not, they don't really interest me all that much, I gotta say. But, you know, Jerome, you've seen it. The interest level on our website was huge. I mean, tons and tons of reads every night for the two results. And the overwhelming reaction that I saw, kind of underwhelmed at the results. I mean, the same thing for the second night on the 13th. 400 to 500,
well,
again.
Chris, to be fair, there's a big difference between clicking on the results to see what happened at the show and plucking down your money to go see it. I mean, there's, you know, people can read about a show for free. It's another to just go to the stadium and to see it. So I figured there was going to be at least curiosity just in some of the names that are involved, because there are a lot of former WWE names involved. You know, Jim Cornette's involved. So I'm not really all that surprised. And, you know, you've also got some pretty big indie names that were on these shows too. So I'm not completely...
Right, Moose just defeated Kingo Congo Kong. I mean, that's a big match.
Literally and figuratively. So I'm not totally surprised that there were a lot of hits for these shows. But, you know, at the end of the day, hypothetically, if they were to come out on MP4 tomorrow, how many people of those X amount that clicked would actually buy the show? If I would bet 20 to 30% at most.
Oh, yeah. Same here. And then just reading some of the reactions when we, you know, I go to the Reddit, the Squared Circle group. You know, it's a pretty large community of wrestling fans. And, man, just kind of the same reaction. Just, wow. I don't believe these were TV tapings. Probably some of the matches will make TV, but not all of them will. And like you said, the interest level, I don't know. But if it did come out in MP4 tomorrow, yeah, probably not a lot of people would buy them. And I'd be willing to bet that even some of the people that were excited about the product are probably still just going to wait until the Las Vegas show, because those seem more important just by the way they built them up. These house shows, you know, get some flavoring on it and see what people thought. But yeah, I don't know. It's it's a little interesting. And like you said, the Bullet Club version for Global Force Wrestling with Jim Cornette, I don't know how they can make that any less cool. So, but moving on.
I want Global Force to succeed.
Of course.
But it's one of those things, like, what is Global Force Wrestling going to do that is any different than, say, TNA? Because when I look at this roster, this almost feels like, and obviously there's the Jeff Jarrett connection, there's Jim Cornette, and that's the question that I have with any new company, is like, what are you doing to differentiate yourself from every other professional wrestling organization that's going on right now? Because there is a very good variety right now.
Jerome, you didn't see the pictures? They're using a six-sided ring, man.
Again,
that's different.
What organization used to use a six-sided ring?
Yeah.
Need I say more? It's one of those things. It's like Ring of Honor's got the pedigree of this 13-year legacy. And, you know, at a time when there was no second place, Ring of Honor sort of filled the void of ECW at one point. That, and they brought back a style of pro wrestling that really did not exist. And obviously it exists pretty consistently across a number of super indies. But back before Ring of Honor, I mean, there was a serious void of that. And Ring of Honor basically bringing back a style of pro wrestling and also sort of modifying it into the super indie style that is now, you know, incorporated by companies like PWG and Evolve. You know, Evolve's got sort of the technical wrestling. PWG's got that super indie chic going for it. You know, Chikara's the live-action cartoon and comic book. You know, AAW, AIW, and Beyond are, you know, they're super indies to an extent, but they've also got that local connection. It's one of those things, you know, AIW can never run outside of Cleveland because then it really isn't AIW. And the same thing for AAW and Beyond, and to a certain extent, PWG. If you take PWG out of Rosita, then it really isn't the same thing. So at the end of the day, what is Global Force Wrestling going to do that is any different from TNA or WWE? Because the one thing you can say about Lucha Underground, whether you don't like it or whether you like it, it is completely different than any other wrestling product.
Yeah, and it has its own distinct feel or its own flavor. I mean, I can watch Lucha Underground, Ring of Honor, and New Japan on the weekends, you know, instead of, or, you know, on Mondays instead of watching Raw, and I get a distinct feeling of three different styles of storytelling, and it's just great enough that I don't need to really watch anything else. So when Global Force hits, I don't know. I think you're right. What are they going to do that's different? What is going to make them stand out at this point? I mean, if you had to choose between Ring of Honor, Bullet Club, and the Young Bucks, and, you know, basically almost all of it, and the Global Force wrestling of just Doc Gallows and Carl Anderson, I think that's a pretty easy decision to make. But obviously we do want it to succeed, because competition is always better for the industry. So we'll just see what happens. Obviously still no updates as to any TV for Global Force, and I'm not going to be one of those cynical people that go, oh, well, this just means that they still, you know, they're not going to become anything, because they could. There's always a chance. So, but you know what? That actually kind of transitions a little bit into CZW held the Tournament of Death in Townsend, Delaware. Ultimately, Matt Tremont won in a no rope barbed wire. He defeated Connor Claxton in the finals. You can check it out at streamczw.com. Also, their new streaming service at czwstudios.com is out. I believe it's $9.99 per month, which is, you know, for the entire library that they're uploading for CZW and WSU. You know, you're going to have to pick and choose which streaming services you want. But hey, it's still a pretty decent price. I don't think they should have been $9.99, because for $9.99, I'd get Netflix. Like, I'd get Hulu also, you know, so it's kind of like making that decision. But, you know, that's CZW. They now have their streaming service. The NWA is also coming out with a streaming service as well. So we have that to look forward to. And I'm sure at some point we will have a review of Tournament of Death up on PWP. But yeah, Matt Tremont, he is the all-around deathmatch king, apparently.
It is worth noting that they did not do Nick Gage and Matt Tremont unannounced, because I think that is one of the working theories that was going around, is that this was going to be the finals. But CZW, to their credit, and I admittedly am not a deathmatch wrestling fan, but I am smart enough to know that CZW has a major money match, if they do it right, with Nick Gage versus Matt Tremont at Cage of Death. With Tremont winning the Tournament of Death, if they continue to build him winning some death matches, maybe even become the CZW champion, if they do Nick Gage and Matt Tremont in Cage of Death, that show will do record numbers for CZW. That's just how I see it, because I think Nick Gage brings in a certain audience, maybe former CZW fans that aren't necessarily a fan of the product now, and maybe even some casual fans. Like, I can't even argue. Tremont versus Gage is a money match that CZW, if they build to correctly, will make them a lot of money.
We were saying this just a few months ago, how we kind of felt that CZW dropped the ball on Matt Tremont after really building him up. And yeah, now, so they haven't won Tournament of Death 14. Nick Gage, and I think we see it even when it comes to our website, you know, in the interest level of shows that Nick Gage is on, particularly since he's come back to CZW. Yeah, that could do some really great business for them. So, and yeah, I think it's where it's headed. I also will say, I think they made Connor Claxton, You know, I'm seeing him mentioned a lot more. You know, he ended up being in the finals. He defeated DJ Hyde and Nick Gage in one of the first round matches. I saw a lot of people go, oh, well, that's kind of dumb. But then after they saw what the finals were like, oh, okay, that was the point. And that makes sense. You got to build some of the younger talents.
Doing Tremont and Gage unannounced at Tournament of Death is a poor idea. So
yeah, exactly.
I think postponing and getting away from that is a really good move.
And being able to build it, right? Being able to advertise.
Being able to build it, and they found somebody else. So Connor Claxton is somebody else that they can build around. You know, maybe not quite at the level of a Tremont or Gage, but you never know. So it seems like CZW did some smart things for once this past Saturday, a Tournament of Death.
There you go, Drew.
Make your props to Ricky Shane Page for making it to Tournament of Death and being a participant. I probably won't see the match because I heard there's a really gross spot, but good for him. I'm glad that he got to achieve his dream.
Well, you know, after some of the things I heard about After Dark, it can't be that bad. But anyway,
a flaming dildo, Chris. Mark Green used a flaming dildo.
This is definitely going on the adult filter on iTunes. Anyway, Jerome, second largest piece of news that happened last week. Okay, when you think of WWE wanting to open up a minor league of that's not NXT, what is the first promotion, Jerome, that would come to mind?
Remember last Wednesday when this story was all the rage?
Yes.
It's amazing. This story was piping hot last Wednesday, and a week later, it's kind of ice cold at this point. Nothing has really come out since last Wednesday. PW Insider and Dave Meltzer talked pretty heavily about this, but I guess WWN Live and WWE, the rumor is that they are going to have some sort of a relationship moving forward because WWE is none too happy about the action figure deals that Kevin Owens signed. And they don't want to have to deal with any merchandising conflicts, as they obviously have a contract with Mattel, and WWE is in the business of merchandising and making money off of their wrestlers. So basically, the independents, you know, with ProWrestlingTees.com and with, you know, the figure company that, you know, I know you had a chance to talk to one of the people affiliated with that organization just a couple weeks ago. You know, that company is, I guess they're making some waves in the world of professional wrestling with some of the news going around. But to me, I see the positives and the negatives on both sides. And ultimately, at this point, we don't know what's going to happen. I mean, Gabe Sapolsky was putting over TNA just a few weeks ago. And now, seemingly, there's the potential for a deal with WWE. So there's a lot of different directions that this can go. I don't necessarily want a fantasy book at this point because there's so many questions. You know, a guy like Roderick Strong, is he going to be able to work Ring of Honor in WWN? That could be very interesting. The TNA guys. You know, obviously, we don't know what's going to happen with TNA at this point, but there's still a question. You know, what's going to happen with Davey Richards, TJ Perkins, as well as Drew Galloway? Drew Galloway has two WWN titles right now. He's got the Evolve title, and he's got the Open the Freedom Gate title for whatever that's worth. But we just don't know what's going to happen to those guys if they were to have a WWE affiliation. You've also got to, you know, wonder about some of the potential talents that they would bring in as well. Would they be bringing, you know, hypothetically, if WWE were to say, you know, we don't really have anything for Mojo Rawley, is Mojo Rawley going to be working FIP shows and sort of working in the AA company? Or if Dana Brooke is, you know, if they want to book Dana, use Dana Brooke, you know, is she going to be sent to Shine to work with Santana Garrett, who's obviously got more experience and, you know, can have a better match? So there's questions like that. And one of the other interesting aspects to this, Chris, for me, is how is this, you know, who is ultimately going to maintain ownership? Is this a situation where WWE is going to own Evolve, and are they going to have the power to hire and fire people? Or is WWN going to retain ownership of their own, like, streaming service and stuff like that, similar to how OVW used to be under the WWE? Because I could see a scenario, Chris, where Gabe says something on Twitter that is not that smart, and WWE could say, well, Gabe, you said this thing on Twitter. Because this, remember, Chris, that one of the reasons that Gabe was let go from Ring of Honor is because of some of the things that he would say on the message board. And I don't think he was necessarily on Twitter at that point. I think it was more about just the message board, right?
Yeah, mainly the message board.
So there is that possibility. And, you know, what if WWE, and this is why I want to know specifics, you know, what's to stop WWE from saying, oh, Gabe is not going to be running Evolve anymore. Bryan Danielson is in charge, or Rob Naylor is going to run it now, or something like that. So we don't know anything. That's the reality. This could go in a number of different directions.
And Solomon Crowe is now booking Evolve. Awesome.
So, and these are all hypotheticals. The reality is, we don't know what is going to happen. So, there is nothing official as it pertains to the WWE connection. All I'm going to say is, typically where there is smoke, there is fire. So, you can damn well bet that there is something going on, but nobody is willing to say much of anything at this point. And there is no doubt that a lot of I's have to be dotted. T's need to be crossed before this happens. You know, I'm sure WWE's got to do some thorough vetting. And, you know, this entire story, this is the only scenario in which people were pissed off about a Zack Sabre Jr. announcement to Evolve.
Right? In any other situation, people would have been elated with that, but they were not after some rather fun tweets from Gabe. You know, I agree with you in the sense that, you know, they do have to really understand what their different situations are, what the powers are, what is going to happen. Because to my understanding, it would really just be that WWE didn't like what happened with Kevin Owens' likeness being used by Figure Toy Company. And you can check out that podcast that we did with Christy Petrillo. And he goes in a lot of those details. Who helped out? You know, the former Curt Hawkins, Brian Myers, and the Young Bucks really helped get this. And it should be noted that the Wrestling Superstar, which is a sister site to the Axe Figure Toy Company, Figure Toy Company, saying that they're going to be releasing more names and you're going to have a finalized total of the indie wrestlers that are on board with this. So that's going to be interesting as well. Obviously, the whole situation, the irony is abound with it being because of something Ring of Honor did. That just kind of, I think the jokes kind of write themselves. But really what it comes down to is WWE is kind of using WWE Lies as a shield, saying, hey, if we're interested in this wrestler, we don't want to sign them to, say, you know, a $20,000, $30,000, maybe, you know, $40,000 developmental contract, but why don't you sign them to an obviously less amount, but that way they're signed in, they can't go to Ring of Honor, they can't go to TNA and have another merchandise deal. So obviously these WWE Live contracts now a little bit even more exclusive, which is interesting in and of itself, at least for me. So we're going to see what talents they pick. Obviously, I don't think that it falls for everyone that, for example, Jerome, I don't, and this is not a slight on them, but I don't really see Johnny Vandal of FIP going, oh, well, now I'm a WWE kind of affiliated guy. Like, nah, I think you're in the WWE Live family for sure, but you're not part of who WWE is looking at. And maybe I'm wrong. You know, like I said, it's not a slight on him. I'm just using him as an example. So when it comes to what they have to hash out, I would hope that WWE wouldn't suddenly would have ownership, because I think that's ridiculous. It's I do think that they're going to have some controls on there, but, you know, and Gabe's, you know, you kind of point out what Gabe's faults were back then. You know, it's a different year. It's 2015. He's a little bit of a changed man. He's a family guy now. So maybe this whole thing, it has to be scrutinized. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. But yeah, it's, like you said, it was super hot last week. And now I don't think anyone's really talking about it, just because there is also not a whole lot of new information out yet. So really, what else can be said? Should be noted that
things shift so quickly in wrestling now. Money in the Bank and, you know, you've got New Japan, you've got Best in the World. There's so much stuff every single week. There's so much going on that...
Well, Jerome, I mean, you realize that's why Kevin Owens lost to Cena at Money in the Bank, right?
Yeah, that's why.
That's right.
I'm just glad that he powerbombed Machine Gun Kelly off the stage.
I saw the gif of that. That looked amazing.
One of the very best moments in the history of WWE, I would argue, because Kevin Owens... I think he turned himself babyface with that move. I don't know if that was the intention, but certainly one could make an argument that Kevin Owens is one of the most popular men in the city of Cleveland right now, for what he did to Machine Gun Kelly.
I know you've had kind of a busy week.
James is a solid number one. Kevin Owens is probably number two.
I can see that. I know you've had a busy week. Did you get a chance to see the Cena Owens match from Money in the Bank?
Watch Money in the Bank. So
that was a great match, man. The storytelling in that match was spectacular.
I'm gonna say this about Money in the Bank because I don't particularly feel like getting into the specifics. There was a lot of really, really good wrestling on the show. There was a lot of really, really bad booking on the show.
I just wanted to talk about the one match. I didn't see any. I know that Sheamus won, but I mean, that's kind of dumb, but whatever. I don't care.
Owens and Cena was great.
And Cena did a code red, albeit a almost botched one from the beginning.
I can't believe it. I mean, what can you say about the Cena and Owens was undoubtedly another match of the year contender. It was very, very good. It was easily the best match on the show, and Owens and Cena are going to win Feud of the Year for the Observer, and they deserve it because they have done a really good job building this feud and having really great matches as well. So you can't really argue at this point. What would WWE be without Kevin Owens right now? They would be in deep trouble because Owens is by far the best thing on WWE TV, and the match with Samoa Joe is airing tonight. Most people are probably going to listen to this. Kevin Owens on NXT tonight wrestling Samoa Joe. So obviously that's going to be a big deal. Honestly, this Wednesday night block tonight is probably one of the stronger ones that we've got because you've got Johnny Mundo will be taking on Prince Puma in an Iron Man match. Ring of Honor and Destination.
Right, that is tonight.
It is Matt Sydal and ACH versus Naito and Tanahashi. And of course you've got Samoa Joe versus Kevin Owens on NXT. So a huge night in the Wednesday night wrestling block.
I mean, and then there's Impact Wrestling.
I don't watch it, so I don't particularly care to discuss it.
kind of going back a little bit to Evolve, they have announced they're going back to New York August 15th in Queens and August 16th in Deer Park. They also gave us a couple more matches for Evolve 45, which is happening in Ybor City, Florida at the Orpheum. You're going to have the Evolve and DGUSA champion Drew Galloway and Roderick Strong taking on the premier athlete brand of Anthony Nese and Caleb Conley. Davey Richards versus Zack Sabre Jr., which I'm looking forward to. Chris Hero versus Trevor Lee, a rematch from 43. Rich Swann versus Timothy Thatcher and Biff Busick versus Andrew Everett. So lots of good matches there. It should be a pretty fun show. It should also be mentioned that they, I believe on the WM Live, on their the Roku channel, they've released I think it's called Dream in the free section of the Roku channel from 2005. It featured Dusty Rhodes. So obviously still kind of a remembrance of him going forward. So Jerome, I guess, you know, this is kind of where we get into Ring of Honor a little bit more news about the ratings from last week. We are going to do a preview for Best in the World, which is taking place on Friday. But last week's episode, total viewership was up 299,000 on Destination America. The first airing of the show, 161, and the replay after Impact had 138. It is up from 273, quite a significant amount, so that's pretty good. Still, with basically no advertising. And for any, okay, Jerome, I know you've probably seen this on Twitter as well. If Ring of Honor is retweeting and using their own social networks to tell us that they're on Destination America, guys, that is advertising, but it is also not advertising because it's free. It doesn't cost them anything to put it on their own Twitter and Facebook.
The echo chamber on Twitter. You have to have advertising on the network that you are on in order to generate ratings. That's just the reality of the situation because there's no way that you're going to get casual fans, which I presumably that's what you'll need to succeed on a cable network. This isn't a situation where Ring of Honor can rely on just word of mouth and social media, so it's crucial that they get more advertising from Destination America because if you think about it, if they get more advertising and if Destination America actually mentions that Ring of Honor is on their station, there may come a point when they can start doing even better ratings and perhaps even outrating Impact, which is, I mean, the fact that it's under 100,000 viewers at this point, the difference if you combine the replays, it's under 100,000. That is flat out embarrassing, given that Ring of Honor is also on Sinclair stations across the country. And I will never continue to not be amazed. And TNA is a sinking ship right now. And Ring of Honor, on Destination America. You know, it's not the greatest thing in the world, let's be honest, but for Ring of Honor, it's perfect, because all they're doing is they're selling the tape of the show that is airing, and it's giving them some extra viewership. That's really what it comes down to, and that's really, really important for Ring of Honor to generate that revenue. And we'll talk about Best in the World in just a few minutes, but it's good that there was the rating went up. That's obviously very, very important. I don't know how Ring of Honor is going to do during the summer. I think that's another challenge to this. But the one positive thing is Ring of Honor is airing on Wednesday nights. They are avoiding the NFL on Monday nights and Thursday nights. So I think that is huge for their ratings, because the NFL is a juggernaut, and Ring of Honor is best to avoid the National Football League at all costs.
And that is what they're doing. So it's great. It works out for everyone involved. And yeah, I would say that also looking at the replays, that people are interested in them. It's pretty, pretty great that they show Ring of Honor the first time, then they're showing Impact, and then you get the second viewing, and they're gaining viewers. It's not like with TNA, where I believe they have a majority for the first run, and then afterwards, I think it drops down to just, double digits in the thousands, which I'm not saying that, people aren't going to watch wrestling from, I believe it's like, 11 to midnight, something like that. It's a pretty ridiculous time. But still, they're growing, and Ring of Honor, just imagine if they actually had some money behind it. That'd be pretty great. So, the last bit of news before we get into a preview for Best in the World, PWG, the first participants for BOLA 2015. It's Will Ospreay and Marty Scurll, they are coming all the way from the UK. And Jerome, just these two name announcements alone is already generating such a huge buzz for BOLA. I mean, I'm excited. I'm going. I know Kevin is planning on coming out. I know that, you have some plans. I don't know if you finalize them or not. But still, already pretty big news for PWG. And then they also mentioned Jack Evans making his return. And Angelico is making his debut at Tremendous for Davey Richards, and Eddie Edwards also returning, as well as Akira Tozawa coming back to PWG. Jerome, this news, it couldn't be any less exciting.
PWG certainly knows when to make their announcements right in the first hour of Raw, which if you read Larry Zonka's review and if you read any person with credibility, the first hour of Raw was apparently dreadful. So the good news is PWG perked the perfect time to catch the attention of jaded wrestling fans. The Akira Tozawa news is very, very exciting. A little disappointing, maybe not in BOLA, but it's great that he's going to be in PWG. That's just him, even if it's a one-time-only thing. That's awesome, and I'm really happy to see Tozawa in PWG. That's great. So, obviously, the BOLA, couple of participants. Marty Scurll is someone who has been in the States a couple of times. I know when WXW did their show in Philadelphia, Scurll was a part of that. I believe he was a part of Best of the Best as well. So he's no stranger to the United States, but obviously the last time he was here is about 4 or 5 years ago. He's gotten significantly better, and there's no doubt in my mind that PWG bringing him in, there's a very good reason for that, and he's going to be very good. Will Ospreay is not someone that I have ever seen before. But I know that there were a lot of people that were very, very excited to read that announcement. And I believe anybody who watches or follows the Progress promotion, those people in particular were putting over how good Will Ospreay is. And Progress Wrestling, not necessarily a company that we discuss a lot here on the podcast, but I know that there are a lot of people, both in the UK and even here, who would follow us here at PW Ponderings. I know that they are really big fans of that promotion. So a very good start for BOLA. I think it's gotten that buzz right away. And I think one of the things that we discussed is, what was PWG going to do this year to capture people's attention? Because obviously, last year, everybody and their mothers was in the 2014 Battle of Los Angeles. How do you possibly follow that up, given the fact that you're basically not going to be able to use Ring of Honor contracted talent? And there's a possibility that a guy, like Ricochet is not going to be a part of it. So what do? Well, you book some international talent. And obviously you've got two UK guys to start that off. And Chris, I don't know if you noticed this. I pointed this out on Twitter earlier. Kenny Omega has been booked for a PWS show that is taking place on August the 22nd. August the 22nd happens to be 1 week before the Battle of Los Angeles. So, obviously, it's not a guarantee. There are no promises. And, you know, I could very easily be wrong. But do not be surprised if Kenny Omega is booked for Bola as well. And, obviously, given the fact that he was in it last year, given the fact that he is in the United States for at least the week prior, I'm not going to be surprised, and I think it'll be really great for PWG if they bring in Kenny Omega for the second straight year.
Should also be noted that JT Dunn, I believe, has been advertised for an AWS show, which happens the same weekend as Bola. So just throwing that out there. I'm not saying that that he's in, but it's interesting that he'll be making his way out here to California as well. So yeah,
I sort of make those connections, and those are logical ones to make. And obviously, JT Dunn getting into PWG is also a very positive thing as well.
Oh, of course, I do want to mention, since it is PWG related, and also probably should have brought it up much earlier. The news, you know, kind of breaking the past few days of the retirement of Josh Alexander, and this kind of hits home. It's a little hard because he has been having such a good, you know, doing stuff in Ring of Honor and PWG, and for any of you that have read his blog, you'll know why, you know, because he had a apparently secret neck surgery, and, you know, he's doing what is best for his family and for himself.
Well, he's going to have a neck surgery.
He had one, and yes, he was going to have
another. And he's going to have another one on July 23rd, and that basically means that he has to step away from wrestling. You know, obviously now he has a family, he has a child, so he's got to step away from wrestling. He himself did not call it a retirement. I guess so that leaves the door open a little bit, but Josh Alexander presumably will be gone from the world of wrestling and will not be returning as far as we know. And, you know, look, everything changes in wrestling, but I he's obviously doing what is best for himself, for his family, and for his health. And, you know, I'd heard some chatter about what was going on with Josh Alexander, but he made it official on Sunday. At the Alpha One show, he announced his retirement, his upcoming retirement. I guess July the 12th is going to be his last show. That will be for the Alpha One promotion. He will be teaming up with his Monster Mafia tag team partner, Ethan Page. Do you have who they're taking on? I believe they're taking on Alexander Del Bruno and Scotty O'Shea, correct?
Yes.
So that is going to be a really huge deal. There's a lot to unpack with this Josh Alexander news, Chris, so let's get into it. We've got the AEW angle, we've got the AIW angle, and we've got the Ring of Honor angle to tackle with Josh Alexander.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it just should be fitting that I start off with the Ring of Honor stuff. He talked about, you know, wanting to make it there after, you know, I believe he said about 8 years in this business, wanting to get that contract, and the first place that he went to, obviously, was Ring of Honor. He had a great match with Red Dragon. I mean, it was so... I saw it on TV, but also just the people raving about it, and he talked about, in his blog, and this is all public knowledge, you know, this is stuff, it's right there in his blog, go read it. There is a link on our Facebook page, it's also in the article up on the website. And he mentioned how going to the tryouts, he was basically paying a lot of money, you know, particularly when you're an indie wrestler, having to pay a fee to get a tryout. Not even a for sure thing, just a tryout. And this is a man who I think he's well known, him and Ethan Page, and that whole situation in and of itself.
By the time Josh Alexander was doing these Ring of Honor camps, I believe he was in both AEW and AIW.
Yes, he was a known commodity. You know, Jerome, you know, we're in the circles, we hear some things, and pretty much he spoke to it, just that having to pay this amount to get an un-for-sure thing, and obviously it didn't really pan out the way him and Ethan Page wanted it to, so luckily they made it to PWG because of their work ethic, but you're a little bit more familiar with the AIW and AAW being there, you know, firsthand for some of it, so, but what he wrote about Ring of Honor, it's just another... It's just one of those stories that you hear about and you just kind of shake your head. I don't want to characterize it because obviously I'm not involved with Ring of Honor and I don't want to just say, oh, this is exactly what it is. But essentially, Josh Alexander implied it was kind of a cash grab and there's no other way to say it.
I mean, Josh Alexander is saying what everybody is thinking, but very few people will say publicly. Obviously, no professional wrestler is going to come out and say what Josh Alexander said. And honestly, I understand it from a wrestler's perspective. It's very difficult. You know, you've got to navigate some tough terrain when it comes to the world of wrestling. But how many other guys who have gone to these camps feel the same way? I will bet you a fairly good percentage of them, even the ones that have actually made it into Ring of Honor, I bet they feel this way too. It's very unfortunate, and this is something that we're gonna be discussing, I think, for a pretty consistent amount of time, and that we've discussed for a while. Ring of Honor is not going out, and they're not signing the top independent talent anymore. They're relying on these camps, and I think it's good to have these camps. And you're going to find some diamonds in the rough. And, you know, maybe you're going to find some guys who maybe you would not have seen in a Beyond Wrestling or an AIW or an AEW. So the camps are fine. I have nothing against, you know, trying to find someone like Donovan Dijak, who, you know, maybe isn't quite ready for Ring of Honor right now, but who is someone that they can sort of push along. You know, you can't argue with a guy like Hansen. Hansen is a huge part of the company right now and is certainly someone that is worth having around, but is not someone that if you would just looked at the independent scene, you would not have plucked out a Hansen. So I understand the camps. I think there's value to them, but I understand where Josh Alexander is coming from as well. The fact that he's, you know, he is someone who has made it to an extent on the independent scene and forcing him to go through these camps is kind of ridiculous. It's kind of a joke. And to me, a guy like Biff Busick is also in the same situation. Biff Busick should not have to pay X amount of dollars to go to Ring of Honor training camp. He should be in Ring of Honor right now. And there's a lot of guys who I feel should be in Ring of Honor right now because of how good they are and what I think they could add to the Ring of Honor roster right now. So
it also kind of speaks to what WWE wanted to do with WWN Live in the sense that, okay, pick the best talents out there if we're interested in them so that they can't go to Ring of Honor. Which, at this point, Ring of Honor's interest in gathering the quote-unquote all of the best like they used to, not really there. Which is fine because also, because we still have guys like Don Castle.
We talk about this a lot. Ring of Honor really does have to do a better job of acquiring talent because this is an issue. I would argue it continues to be an issue that they're not addressing right now. And, you know, obviously this isn't something that's going to affect them next week, but I think it does affect them in the long term as they, you know, start to lose some guys and as, you know, AJ Styles and Matt Sydal and Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian, these are not young folks. They're going to have to be replaced sometime sooner rather than later, especially given that Ring of Honor style. But I want to get back to Josh Alexander because I think we're sort of losing the point here. Josh Alexander is an incredibly talented young individual who I have a ton of respect for and is someone that it's terribly unfortunate that he is not going to be a part of the world of independent wrestling for the foreseeable future, if ever again. Because this is a guy who is the AIW champion and he has a scheduled title defense against Ricky Shane Page, and as far as we know, he will be making that title defense. AIW made it official that if Josh Alexander retains the title, that there will be a tournament on August the 14th at their Geek Fest show. They will have a tournament to crown a new AIW champion. And, you know, obviously, you can sort of surmise and look at what's going to happen there. You know, I certainly have a firm belief in, based on the storyline and sort of where they're going, you know, who's going to win that match, and the way that they've been building into it. For AAW, he is also the AAW champion. Chris, it's sad. He is one of two people to pin Samoa Joe clean, and he now has to retire. How much does that suck?
Oh, I think it has to hurt somewhere. And obviously not as grave of a situation or serious of a situation, but, you know, it's like when Michael Elgin was stuck in Canada and had to forgo all these storylines. Once again, AIW finds themselves, and AAW find themselves in this position, and it's unfortunate. Obviously, everyone wishes Josh Alexander the best.
If you look at that AIW title situation, it's horrible. Like, what's going on? Michael Elgin's gotten stuck in Canada. Tim Donst had to have his kidney removed, and Josh Alexander now has to retire. Those are your last three AIW champions. That doesn't even include Ethan Page, who had to lose the title at one point because of border issues. The AIW title is cursed at this point, and it's unfortunate.
Ricky Shane Page, get yourself out of that title match.
Yeah, Josh Alexander should go after the Intense title. He will be much better off. I do not want to see what tragedy befalls Ricky Shane Page. But as far as AEW goes, they're having two shows this weekend. AEW is running on July 19th, this Friday, at Bourbon Street. They will
pretty stacked card.
Yes, the AEW tag team titles will be online. OI4K will be wrestling Josh Alexander and Ethan Page. The tag titles are on the line. AEW has made it clear that Ethan Page, this is his last weekend in AEW. They have not said what's going to happen with the tag titles and the heavyweight title if Alexander and Page win. Presumably, if the booking, it would be a tournament of some sort for both of that. What else is going on in the AEW show? I believe Tommaso Ciampa is wrestling Eddie Kingston. Candice LeRae is wrestling Allison Kaye. There's also a Davey Richards versus Johnny Gargano match. Chris Sabin is off of the AEW show due to injury, so they're doing Davey Richards and Gargano instead. And for the Heritage title, it will be Christian Faith versus Lewis Linden. So a lot of interesting stuff that is taking place this Friday at AEW at 115 Bourbon Street. And Chris, unfortunately, I have some family commitments that I have to address, so I will not be at AEW this Friday. I would love to be, but family commitments are coming first. I will be at AEW Vanguard on Saturday. I will be announcing the show. It has already been said that Josh Alexander will be making his last defense of the AEW Heavyweight Championship on that night. His opponent has not been announced yet. There are also some additional matches. Merrick Brave will be wrestling Paco. Yes, Paco will be wrestling Merrick Brave. There's also an intergender six-person tag team match that's taking place. And Chris, one of the more anticipated matches that I have listed here is Justice Jones versus Kongo Kong, a Hoss Division battle, if there ever was one. I am very, very excited that I will get to call that matchup in addition to everything else going on at Vanguard this Saturday. So 115 Bourbon Street, hopefully everybody can make it out for that. Unfortunately, I will not be there. I will be at AEW Vanguard, and I am very, very excited. Especially knowing that it is Josh Alexander's last match in AEW, and he will be defending the title. So a lot of really good stuff coming up this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it should be, like you said, Friday, June 19th. Bell time is 7:45, doors open at 7 for AEW. Killers Among Us, obviously headlined by the tag title match, RA4K versus Monster Mafia. And then AEW Vanguard, June 20th, Berwyn's Eagle Club, Berwyn, Illinois. Bell time, 7:30, doors open at 6:45. Yeah, you know, I believe it's also announced, let's see, Alexei Nicole, Connor Braxton, Eli Machete versus Angelus Lane, Orlando Christopher, and Austin Mannix, the Viking War Party versus Twig Phoenix, Lamar Tyne, and Eric Ryan. And a bunch of other people are announced at Clash, Benjamin Boone, Alex Downs, and Trick Davis, and more for Vanguard, The Uprising. So, should be a lot of fun for you, Jerome. Hopefully, you know, you guys can check it out, smartmarkvideo.com. So, yeah, I mean, that's just the situation. It's kind of a sucky one, for sure. There's really nothing else that you can say to describe it. So, but still, everyone that can, go and support Josh Alexander at Alpha 1 July 12th and, you know, see his last match for the time being. Jerome, I guess it is that time. The big pay-per-view is this Friday, going up head-to-head with AEW, Ring of Honor presenting Best in the World live on pay-per-view, also on RHWrestling.com, and that Flips app. Yeah, that's right. You know, the one that kind of...
Chris, why? Why?
But, Jerome, you haven't heard the best part. Flips not only is adding Ring of Honor pay-per-views, also TNA Impact pay-per-views will be on there.
Well, they're one pay-per-view.
Well, yes, the one. But, hey, it's still... the jokes are there, folks. You can insert them.
I mean,
but yes.
The Flips app is terrible. Don't do it. Just go to ROHWrestling.com.
Right.
Or order it on pay-per-view if you so choose. For the love of God, do not order off the Flips app. Please.
Yeah, do not. Trust me. Save yourself the hassle. Because you won't be able to tweet us like last time during Wrestle Kingdom asking us for help because, well, we really can't do anything for you.
So. Yes, we will be watching on either our televisions or our computers.
Right. I just remember this from Wrestle Kingdom when Brian was doing it live and he was telling us, guys, I'm getting tweets about asking how to use the Flips app. It's like, we can't help anyone. We're not affiliated. But anyway, live on pay-per-view, Best in the World, June 19th, Terminal 5, one of the favorite venues for Ring of Honor fans in New York, right? Yeah, maybe.
Chris, why don't you explain why is there no podcast of Honor? Why is the audience stuck with you and me doing the preview for Best in the World?
Okay, this is what happens. Chris Michio and Ari Berenstein both work, I'll say, in the education field in New York. They're very busy men. Apparently there's some testing. I don't know. The kids need help, but that's what they're doing.
Andrew Cuomo is a terrible governor.
I mean, I wasn't going to say that, Jerome, but man.
I say it. And I'm a liberal, so think about that.
Well, you're also riding the high of your Stanley Cup win, you jerk.
I mean, this is, well, Chris, there's a lot.
There is a lot. Hey, I am missing Game 6 right... Well, actually, I'm not missing Game 6 right now. But it's going to be on tonight, okay? Warriors are going to win, and it's going to be great. That's probably not going to happen. I know. It's kind of the worst.
Well, they're up by 10 as we talk, Chris. So there's a distinct possibility. And it is Cleveland. Cleveland does tend to choke a lot, so...
Hey, you know, as long as there aren't any wardrobe malfunctions from LeBron, then I'm happy. That will not be happening on this pay-per-view, folks.
No, I think let's hope not. So let's do a match-by-match rundown of Best in the World.
Let's start from the bottom, though, because some of these bottom matches, they're pretty fun. War Machine versus CNC Wrestle Factory coming back together. Caprice Coleman and Cedric Alexander. Jerome, they're finally doing something with Cedric. Kind of.
Chris, if we were to do a confidence pool, this is the match that I would put all of the most amount of points I would put on this match. War Machine is 100% winning this match. Cedric Alexander is 100% turning heel on Caprice Coleman afterward. No, I shouldn't say that. That second part is not 100%. War Machine is winning 100%. I would say 75% chance that Cedric Alexander turns heel afterward. That's just one of the...
Have you already seen this week's TV, or are you not watching until Wednesday? For those that have watched, I think you know that what Jerome said the first time is very likely to happen. But I don't want to spoil for you, Jerome, because you can't see it till Wednesday. But I've already watched the episode. It's a great episode. You're going to enjoy. Moose versus Cedric, much better than it deserved to be. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, the finish sounds awful, though, regardless of how good the match was.
Yes, that is true, but it does tie into this. So that's why I'm not spoiling it.
So yeah, War Machine's going to win, and they should.
They're on a roll.
They're on a roll right now, and I think Ring of Honor's got some steam behind them. And based off of what I think is going to happen in the tag title match, I think it makes a lot more sense for War Machine and another babyface team on the show to win. So yeah, Rowe and Hanson are coming away with the victory.
Now, this is the next match, Dalton Castle versus Silas Young. Dalton Castle coming off a loss to Jushin Thunder Liger. But he equals ratings, Jerome. Both of the ratings of the TV shows that he's on, doing well. Ratings are rising, so there you go. And then Silas Young, his recent return, and he's still the last real man. By the way, his Twitter, people, if you're not following it, it is pretty hilarious. He's doing an amazing job on Twitter. Much better than I thought he would. So
to me... I think this can go one of two ways. I'm of two minds on this match. To me, Silas Young is probably the person who should win, but I can also see a strong argument for Dalton Castle, because my logical take on it is if Jay Lethal is winning the Ring of Honor title, then we really need some baby faces to either challenge Lethal or to potentially be taken seriously for the television title. So... I could see this being a really heavy heel card, a lot of heels going over, and you know, obviously, I think there's going to be at least one turn. So I'm this would be if again coming back to the confidence pool idea, this would be the match that I am least confident about. So I'm going to say Silas Young, but I could very easily see Dalton Castle going over in this one.
Yeah, I was actually going to go with Dalton Castle going over Silas Young to prepare him for whatever it is they do with that TV title afterwards. Not saying that Silas Young couldn't be in there as well, but so you have Silas Young lose here on the pay-per-view, and Dalton Castle wins, so Dalton Castle looks good, but Silas Young comes back, and whatever they do with it, because Silas Young can always look strong, but I think Dalton Castle kind of really needs that right now, particularly since in the next match, I'm predicting Donovan Dijak to beat Mark Briscoe, because, you know, Mark Briscoe doesn't win anyway, and Dijak, like you know, we were talking about this, the talent pool right now in Ring of Honor, they really got to start setting in these younger guys. That is not saying that they are going to be future Bryan Danielsons and Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens, but they at least need to be built up, and Dijak is one of those guys. And he's got the size. He's got, you know, he's okay in the ring. Charisma-wise, he's got some, it's a weird something, but he's got something. It's not, you know, it's not nothing. So he should be beating Mark Briscoe, so that's why I'm saying Dalton Castle wins the last match. Jerome, in your confidence pool, Mark Briscoe getting a win? Is that even a thing?
Yeah, I think Mark Briscoe, I don't think they're going to put Donovan Dijak. They have done absolutely nothing. Donovan Dijak has zero momentum. Remember when he won the Top Prospect Tournament and he is easily the third most over person, maybe probably second coming out of that tournament? He's clearly behind Dalton Castle. There is way more. Behind Dalton Castle. Donovan Dijak wins the Top Prospect Tournament, and he is shunted to the back of the House of Truth. So I see no reason. Mark Briscoe probably should just get the victory here.
Is that because he's with ODB and it'd be a happy yay moment? Is that what you're
saying? Yeah, I guess.
Oh, okay.
I'm not. This is probably the match I'm least looking forward to, because Mark Briscoe singles matches do nothing for me, and Donovan Dijak is way too green at this point for me to really get invested in his matches. You know, I think he's got a lot of potential. He certainly got the look. I think he's got some potential, but this is a project for Ring of Honor. He's not someone that you should really take all that seriously until about next. I would say this time next year is when you can really start seeing where is Donovan Dijak and is he ready to go to the next level.
Who do you like more between him and Jay Diesel, though? Because I feel like Jay Diesel's got
Dijak. Jay Diesel looks like a lump in the ring.
Okay, good. Okay.
Donovan Dijak is clearly the better of the two, even now. And Jay Diesel's been around for a little bit.
Yes, he has. And I don't know if that's to his detriment or not at this moment. So the next match should be a lot of fun. Matt Sydal and ACH going up against Adam Page and BJ Whitmer. They've been doing this thing with the Decade and Colby Carino. I don't know if Colby's going to be involved with this. He's not here. He's not mentioned on the Ring of Honor website, but that's not always indicative of anything. So, I mean, the Decade, it's kind of just there. I mean, after the loss of Jimmy Jacobs, it has lost a lot of steam. Granted, Whitmer does get some heat with the crowd. I think they do it for fun, but, he gets some hate, so it's something. But Sydal and ACH going forward and it sounds like your prediction for the tag title is probably the same as mine. So, since they have had Sydal and ACH on a roll, kind of, in being a tag team and they got some experience, I want to give them the win here. Because I just don't see Paige and Whitmer being built up.
To me, the finish of the match is ACH pinning
Paige.
Because that's sort of been the rivalry, so that's what makes the most sense at this point. This is a pretty cut and dry. Confidence pool very high. The baby faces are going over. ACH and Matt Sydal are going over, and I predict that they are going to be the next program for the World Tag Team Champions of the World.
Before we get to that match, though, we got to go through the Kingdom. Adam Cole, Michael Bennett, and Matt Taven with Maria Kanellis versus the Bullet Club of AJ Styles and the Young Bucks, the actual Bullet Club. to some. So, obviously, this is going to be a great match. It was great the first time. Jerome... Who do you give the win here on pay-per-view? For me, I would think you put the Bullet Club over, but it is also the first, I believe, Adam Cole coming back. He's with the Kingdom. They are, Taven and Bennett are the IWGP Tag Champions. They've also kind of got to look strong, so I don't know. And they're both heel teams.
The Kingdom won, so the Bullet Club's going to win. The Kingdom won in Philadelphia, so the Bullet Club is winning this time. Okay,
booking for
booking. Again, this is a pretty cut and dry result to me. It's probably going to be one of the better matches on the show. If the first match is any indication, this is going to be the work rate match, very similar to the six-man tag that took place at Final Battle of last year. This is definitely the match where it's just going to be about the wrestling, and it's not going to be a storyline heavy. There'll probably be some shenanigans, just like the first match, but I predict the Bullet Club will even up the series at one apiece, and maybe they'll do a third match, perhaps down the road. But yeah,
I say Taven takes the fall, because I don't.
Taven is probably taking the fall. That's what makes the most sense. You know what? Maybe Adam Cole will take the fall, because you know, Bennett and Taven are the IWGP Tag Team Champions right now.
If it's Cole taking the fall, then I think it has to be Styles pinning him. It can't be one of the Unbucks.
Because to me, Adam Cole, as weird as this seems, he's not the one that's really involved in anything right now. He's still sort of just coming back from injury. So Adam Cole probably takes the fall, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. So the Bullet Club wins, and yeah, Styles pinning Cole makes the most sense.
In the number one contender match, Roderick Strong, Mr. Ring of Honor, versus the unbreakable one, Michael Elgin, versus Moose, Jerome. Is there any doubt who's going to win this match? I mean,
Ring of Honor is going to do Moose and Jay Lethal in Baltimore, and they're going to regret it, because it's not going to be very good. Moose is not ready for a main event level match. I don't understand what Ring of Honor is thinking in this situation. Has Moose gotten better? Yes. Is he someone that a year from now will be ready for a Ring of Honor title match? Probably. But as we sit here in June 2015, it was just 7 months ago that he had one of the worst matches of the year against Artie Evans. I have not seen a Moose performance that would lead me to believe that he is going to have a really good match with Jay Lethal coming up in July. I think Moose is winning. I don't think it's a very intelligent move at all. Michael Elgin is a heel, so it's not going to make sense for him to win, especially given the fact that Elgin is going to be a part of the G1, and it's not really going to be even a part of Ring of Honor for a good amount of time. I don't know when the G1 starts, but I cannot imagine that Elgin will be on the Baltimore show on July the 24th, Death Before Dishonor. So, to me, I would have Roderick Strong win, mostly because I think you've got a lot of history with Roderick Strong and Jay Lethal. I think it's a good first program for Lethal. There's a lot of really good matches. Roderick Strong is pretty hot right now as far as match quality goes. I would have Roderick Strong win, mostly because I think you'll get the best possible matches. But to me, the logical choice is Moose, for better or for worse.
Yeah, no, that's kind of where I'm going too. It's like, I want Strong to win, but they are pretty high on Moose right now. So, there it is. And everything you said, I agree with, so I don't really feel like repeating it. So we're up to the match, the no DQ for the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Championships of the World. The Addiction, the Champions, versus Red Dragon. And this is also probably going to be one of the better matches on the show, at least from my estimation. And I'm assuming, Jerome, the Addiction? Yeah?
I mean, there's no reason. They just won the titles. So, right. Yeah, this is a pretty easy choice for me. Saban. I think Chris Sabin is going to be involved in this. I know that he was pulled off of AEW officially because of injury reasons, but I predict that Chris Sabin will interfere in this match and will lead Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian to victory, because this is a no disqualification match, correct?
Yes, no DQ, anything
so,
goes.
Yeah, I predict Chris Sabin will be involved, and there will be some shenanigans, but the Addiction will retain the titles. Because again, very similar to Michael Elgin, you don't know how much Red Dragon is going to be involved with Ring of Honor because of their New Japan commitments. So we'll have to see how that goes. The one thing I will say is, because they're juniors, there is the distinct possibility of O'Reilly and Fish being around for a bit. But I think there's actually more traction than perhaps moving them into singles action than as a tag team. Given, you know, if War Machine wins, if Seidel and ACH wins, those are two tag teams that you can book against the Addiction, and, you know, maybe you can separate, you know, not a heel turn, but maybe you could separate the Addiction for a bit in Ring of Honor and give them some fresh singles matches. So the Addiction winning is a fairly easy call for me. I could see the Addiction very... They should hold on to the tag team titles until Final Battle, and they should either lose them to War Machine or ACH and Matt Sydal, whichever team I think is acceptable. But I say keep them with the titles for the next 6 months.
Agreed. And now we're at the moment of truth, Jerome. Jay versus Jay, title for title, the Ring of Honor World Championship up against the World Television Championship. Jay Briscoe up against Jay Lethal with Truth Martini. Jerome, I think we've been saying it for a few months now that we both think Jay Lethal is winning here and becoming a dual champion. And then my question is, well, what do you do with Jay Briscoe after that? And really, what good does it do for Jay Lethal to defeat Jay Briscoe, be that man that finally pins him? But I don't know. It's still going to be a great match, obviously. So that withstanding, I just don't feel that they built it up really well. I have turned a full 180 degrees on this. The build on TV has been great. The match, the outcome, I'm still kind of iffy on.
I think Lethal's winning. I mean, you don't do this angle and you don't build up the TV title the way you have unless Lethal's winning. The biggest issue that I have had with Jay Lethal's title reign is the match quality has generally been very good, but the interference does nothing for me, and I think we're going to get a lot. I think we're going to get shenanigans in the two biggest in the two title matches, and I'm not happy with that decision. So, yeah, I think Lethal's winning. I think Lethal's title reign can be good, but the issue that I see is there are not a lot of contenders right now. The funny thing about this show is you've got a pretty strong argument that they're doing a good job at the tag titles by booking War Machine to win, by booking Sydal and ACH to win. You've got two tag teams that you are immediately setting up for potential challenges down the road. You don't have that with the singles. You've got Moose. You've got the number one contenders match, so obviously you've got Moose. Right. But it's very tough for me to see who realistically is going to compete against Jay Lethal as a babyface, because Moose is technically a heel. Who's a babyface that's going to challenge Jay Lethal? There are not a lot of strong babyface contenders. And if you think about it, they're going to turn another babyface, potential babyface challenger heel in Cedric Alexander. So that's the problem that I'm seeing with this entire situation, is that there are too many heels in Ring of Honor right now, and they need to turn a couple people babyface. Adam Cole would probably be right at the top of the list. I think people are ready to cheer him anyway, so Adam Cole is someone that I could honestly see them breaking away from the Kingdom and turning babyface potentially. And I think the same thing is going to happen to Moose. I think Moose is going to turn babyface, either full-fledged babyface at Death Before Dishonor, breaking away from Stokely Hathaway and Vita Scott, or someplace in the very near future, because the heel roster is looking pretty thick right now. And yeah. I think Ring of Honor needs to do a better job of building up babyface contenders, because there really isn't going to be that much money in a Briscoe Lethal match.
No, I mean, even if you have Lethal, retaining it all the way through Final Battle, you do this match again, what's Jay Briscoe doing in the meantime? Fighting off Elgin or Strong again? We've seen those feuds. So, yeah, and that's why I said I'm kind of worried about it, just because it is so thin right now. And when you watch the TV's good. They're building up kind of, a solid mid-card range. But when it comes to the top of the card, it's the same rotating guys. And once you have Moose defeat either Strong or Elgin, that person, whoever is pinned, kind of becomes less strong after that. But no pun intended. So, I don't know. But yeah, I mean, overall, I would say it's going to be a good pay-per-view. It's,
No, I'm not sure if it's $45 good, but it'll
I was just about to say, is it $45 good?
I mean,
It's definitely worth buying not on flips,
Chris,
though. I will tell you that.
I can order, if I go to New Japan World, and on the first day of the G1, I can spend my $8 or $9. I can watch the entire G1 for like $8. I'm not saying that Ring of Honor has to charge $8 for this show, but let's be realistic about what the cost of pro wrestling is in 2015. If you are charging anything more than $20 for your show, you are not doing your job.
I mean, it is $35 on Ring of Honor or RHWrestling.com.
That doesn't help.
Okay. I was going to say, is it worth $35?
$35 is too much for a wrestling pay-per-view.
Well, I bought it, so there's that.
I mean, look, there's. I'm sure there are going to be a significant amount of people who are still going to purchase this, but I think there is also a pretty good amount of people who are just, they're going to skip it, because to me, I look at this card and I don't think it's worth $45. I know they've done a very good job of building up the Battle of the Belts. I think it's going to be a good show, but man, I can't see spending $45 on a Friday night during the summer for this show. And it's got a late start. It's got an 8 p.m. I believe it starts 8 p.m. Central Time and 9 p.m. Eastern, right?
I'm looking it up right now, but I do believe you are correct, yes.
So, I mean, that's late, man. People go out on Friday nights. Like I said, especially during the summer, people go out. And that doesn't even take into account the fact, as we're recording this, the NBA Finals, Game 6 is going on. What if Game 7 of the NBA Finals is on?
Oh, man, don't even say that.
Ugh. Here's the thing. The NBA Finals has been doing record ratings for ABC. The highest rated NBA Finals to air on ABC. These are the highest rated NBA Finals since 1998, when Michael Jordan was still in the league. So Ring of Honor needs to be praying that Golden State wins tonight.
Hey, then that means they're doing what I'm doing. All right. So, but yeah, I mean, also, yeah, it's going up against a lot. It is a Friday. It's during the summer. I'm going to be watching it live, probably covering it for PWP, most likely. Ari Bernstein's going to the TV tapings next night, so we will definitely have results for those. So that should be fun. But, yeah, you know, Jerome, it's still going to be a good show overall. Price notwithstanding, even though, yeah, I agree with you. It's definitely pricing a few people out that I do think would buy it if it was, you know, if it was $35 on terrestrial pay-per-view and, you know, $20 on iPay-per-view, they'd buy it.
And I understand why they moved to Fridays. I think it actually makes sense. I'm sure from a financial standpoint, it might actually be a wash if they're getting the extra money from Destination America.
Right. And Friday is better than Saturday, you know, like doing Saturday pay-per-views.
That is true.
Yeah, that hurts.
I guess I don't see this being an issue for Final Battle. I really do think there is a difference between a Friday night in June and a Friday night in December.
Oh, that's definitely true, because that's Christmas time. Everyone's kind of home. No, this is summer.
It's cold. People don't go outside as much. But Friday night during the summer, man, like, that's tough. That is really tough.
And, I mean, that just might be they're a victim of circumstances. Like, when else are they going to hold Best in the World? You know, what?
Right. And obviously, you know, with the Destination America deal, they felt that Friday nights are better. And, you know, maybe financially it makes more sense. But I can't imagine this doing as well as the anniversary show in Vegas.
Well, at least they didn't have to scrap a main event because they didn't have the TV recorded in time for a pay-per-view that they knew was coming up.
Right.
Like some other company.
Ring of Honor isn't doing King of the Mountain, so they've got that going for them.
That is a plus.
I would actually say, despite the handicaps, I think more people are going to order Ring of Honor than Slammiversary.
You know, yeah, I could see that. I can see that.
So that's a compliment. I would say if I were to predict it, what did Final Battle get, Chris? What was it? Was it 8,000 buys?
Yeah, it was slightly under 10, which is not what they wanted.
7,500 buys for this show.
Yeah, I could see that. And Slammiversary, I mean, God knows how many people out of the 404,000 that saw it this last week.
Say 5,000 buys. For Slammiversary.
Which also still says something when it comes to the viewership. You know, if you have Ring of Honor at 299,000 on Destination America, plus the near half, 500,000 that they have on Sinclair, yeah, they're at right now, they probably will get more buys on pay-per-view if more people, you know, just by the law of averages for numbers. So.
Right.
So there you go. That is our preview. Lots of stuff going on. And also, there is also more stuff coming up this weekend. There's never ending of shows like AAW and AAW Vanguard. And, of course, send the results mailbag at pwponderings.com. Jerome, before we get out of here, you should mention, as senior editor, got a lot of new columnists up on the website now.
We do have a lot of new columnists. We have Reese doing columns for us. He's done some things about Puro Stars. and even got a retweet from one Josh Barnett. So very exciting there. Noah Martinez has done a couple of things, one about Roderick Strong and the other about gimmicks in the world of pro wrestling. Dan Holloway did some fantasy booking of Evolve and WWE. We had Ben Pasco writing about social media. And we had Warren Taylor starting off with some reviews of St. Louis Anarchy. And I know that he is going to be reviewing a couple of other Midwest promotions to come in the very near future. We've got Craig, who is going to be reviewing Chikara, starting with the anniversary show. So just a bevy of new writers and new columnists here at Pro Wrestling Ponderings. And you should definitely make sure to support what they are doing.
Absolutely. So a lot of new stuff coming for PWP, and it's been it's pretty good for the website. I hope everyone is enjoying it. As always, send us your feedback. Let us know what you think. And, of course, follow them all on Twitter. So should be a good time. Jerome, it's about that time. Why don't we get out of here? Why don't you get some plugs in about what you're doing? Obviously, AEW Vanguard.
Yeah. So AEW Vanguard is taking place this Saturday night. If you are in the area, definitely make sure to check it out. It will be Josh Alexander's last match for AEW, his last match in Berwyn, and definitely make sure that you come to check that out. Definitely check me out, twitter.com/JeromePWPEditor. I want to thank everybody for their kind words. This was a tough week for me. You know, obviously, you know, Kevin and Chris came into town, but unfortunately on Sunday morning, you know, my 95-year-old grandmother died around 4 a.m. Sunday morning, and that's obviously, you know, been very, very tough on myself and my family. Some people have sent, you know, DMs and texts my way. I want to thank all of those people here on the air. But, you know, I feel fortunate enough that, you know, I'm 30 years old, and, you know, my grandmother was 95, so I can't be too sad about the situation or the circumstances necessarily. I feel incredibly fortunate, and I'm really happy that I got to be a part of the Chikara show this past Saturday, and to see what happened with Kevin being in the ring, and, you know, to be a part of that was incredibly special. I am excited for this weekend to be a part of AEW Vanguard and to celebrate the life and career of Josh Alexander. So life marches on, and the only thing that you can do when, you know, something happens, a death in your family, is to have those things to look forward to. And for me, that's pro wrestling, and that's Chikara this past weekend, that's Vanguard this upcoming weekend, and I know that I will be a big part of Vanguard as on commentary, and I'm really looking forward to it, Chris, and I'm just looking forward to sort of getting back into the flow of things and getting back to normal, and I will slowly start to do that beginning this weekend.
And I'm glad for you. Of course, my thoughts and condolences to you and your family. And, you know, like you said, life moves on, and we have things to look forward to. So, again, thank you, everyone who is listening. If you're checking us out on iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn Radio, leave us a 4- or 5-star review. Really help us out. Also want to thank the VOC Nation for hosting us as well on their podcast series. So thank you, everyone, as always, and we'll talk to you again next week.